Welcome to the Hot Lava Podcast. Kevin Acey, Padres beat writer for the Union Tribune. Jay Posner, sports editor of the Union Tribune. We are both in San Diego County. It's nice to be here. Seems like it's been a while. That's exactly how the Padres felt. But amazingly, well, not amazingly, but you know, impressively, I would say. 7-2 on this road trip. Jay, what did you think watching it from afar?
I would call it amazing and impressive. And I did laugh at Jake Cronenworth's comment. I don't know if it was in your story or in your newsletter that he said, I don't even remember the last time we were home. I'm sure it feels like that even more for you since Jake doesn't fly commercial, I'm pretty sure. So it's good that you're back, and the Padres have to feel great about what they did. I mean, I don't care who you're playing. And, you know, this wasn't the Pirates and the Reds and the Indians. As you noted today, that trip was 6-2, but it felt like it should have been 8-0, or certainly could have been 8-0. This was, you know, the Braves, who did win the World Series last year, the Phillies, who did not have Bryce Harper, but are still supposed to be a pretty good team, and the Giants, who we know have been a good team, and the Padres were 7-2. You know, we could pick apart and probably will pick apart a couple of the games and a couple of the things that happened and a couple of the things that are, you know, still not right with this team. But, you know, they're 27-14. That's pretty good. And it's hard to be too critical when they're, you know, when they're doing that. And of course, they're in a division with a team that's 27-13 and gave away a game yesterday with that weird Max Muncy walk-off error that you don't see every day. But I don't see how anybody could have expected anything more from this road trip than to win 7 out of 9. I mean, I would think you get a winning road trip, that's good. You win 6 out of 9, that's great. To win 7 out of 9, you know, I just don't see how anybody could expect more than that.
They faced really good starting pitching. They mostly handled it and got to the point where they could, you know, beat up on some bullpens. By the way, the Braves had one of the better bullpens in the majors. They beat up on that bullpen. Mm-hmm. You know, I wouldn't say they beat up on the Phillies bullpen. They did what they needed to do to win 2 or 3.
That's yeah, nobody beat up anybody in that game.
The losing team never scored in that series. And then a sweep of the Diamondbacks. At the Diamondbacks. That would have been impressive. At the Giants, the Diamondbacks just never leave my mind. In San Francisco, which is a difficult place to play. It's always intense, and that team is intense, and they got 2 one-run wins. And I don't know. I mean, I have to stop myself from rolling my eyes every time Bob Melvin talks about, you know, the building of the identity and all that. But I don't know, a few more weeks of this and I might start to believe it. He even said it yesterday. You know, it's nice to win one of these, sure, but hey, we've shown we can win the other way. I believe Bob Melvin is always sending his team a message, okay, mm-hmm. and that he wants them to believe that, and hey, it's working for him.
And the thing with Bob Melvin when he sends messages, I think all managers try to send messages. I think the sense I get from the messages Bob Melvin sends is that the players listen. Yeah. And that's what the Padres were counting on when they got Bob Melvin, and that's the whole idea. I mean, look, they got off to a fast start, and we're not going to let this stat go until we get past August. But, you know, in August last year, the Padres were 17 games over 500. It wasn't like maybe they didn't like Jace Tingler. Maybe they didn't listen to Jace Tingler, whatever the case may be. They still played pretty well and for pretty long stretches of time. So I don't think that we can just say that Bob Melvin has changed everything, because we have to see how things go. It feels different, but until they have a stretch where they don't play well and we see how they react to it, you know, I think we need to certainly withhold judgment a little bit. But as I said, 27-14 is pretty hard to complain about. And now they're playing a team, you know, we can get into Milwaukee right away if you want, or we can go back and talk about the weekend, but they're playing a team now coming in this week that's 26-15, the Brewers. So again, it's a good test. The one thing I want to note with the Padres is they're 17-7 on the road. That's the best winning percentage in baseball for a road team. They're only 10-7 at home, so they'll get almost caught up in terms of home versus road games this week when they play 3 with the Brewers, 3 with the Pirates. But I don't know if it says anything about them, if it says anything about Melvin or whatever, and Ryan Christensen, who obviously did well as a fill-in, but to have the best record on the road is a good thing. And like I said, the last nine games were against teams that are pretty good, or at least should be pretty good.
Yeah, before we get to the Brewers, real quick, like if you're talking about singular forces, Manny Machado would be number one on my list of, you know, what's going right this year. But Bob Melvin is right there. And obviously, I agree with everything you said, everything that we've watched with the Padres now should be viewed through what's the date, you know? Right. And last year, at the end of May, I really believe that Milwaukee, Houston, Chicago trip was one of the things that started the downturn for this team. It was a rough trip, and they were playing good teams at the time. They came home and played the Mets, I believe, then the Cubs again. It was just this was about when it started to not be great. But like you said, they still hung on for another couple months. I mean, right. You know, never got – they actually in June got super hot again for a stretch of 10 days. But then in July, just kind of limped through three wins, three losses, you know. And we're like, oh, okay, fine. This is how they'll get to the playoffs. Everything should be viewed through that. But it is different. They haven't lost two in a row.
I wanted to mention that because I was just looking back at this trip. You know, it started with the game, the Friday night game in Atlanta. And, you know, the Padres had a lead in that game and then coughed it up in the sixth inning with a four-run inning. They came back and scored to go ahead right away in the seventh, mm-hmm. and then added on in the ninth. And then the next day, and this is the one game on the trip where you can say, hey, they really let one get away. They had the big inning in the top of the eighth on that Saturday in Atlanta, and Steven Wilson coughed it up in the bottom of the eighth. We talked about that last week. But as we also talked about, they came right back and they won on Sunday. And when they lost in Philadelphia, they came right back and they won again. In fact, they've won four in a row. This team has not lost even two in a row for a few weeks, right?
April 15th and 16th to the Braves.
And not lost more than two in a row all season.
And there was one other time they lost two in a row to the Giants.
Yeah. And so, I mean, I think there's something to be said for that this team has, at least at this point, and we're a quarter, you know, I guess pretty much exactly a quarter of the way through the season right now. And they have not had a losing streak of, I wouldn't even call two games a losing streak. They've not had a losing streak. I don't know about every other team in baseball. I know the Dodgers have had a streak of longer than two games. So I do think there's something to be said for that. And obviously it's Melvin who helps. It's Machado, who's been just unbelievable. It's also, and it starts with the pitching.
That's why I said the singular force is Manny.
Right.
And then there's Bob Melvin. And then if you're the MVP of the team is the starting rotation.
And if you're going to pitch like this and the way that these guys have pitched, then that's going to keep you. I mean, look, you and I have watched a lot of baseball. If you're going to pitch like this, it's going to keep you from having long losing streaks. And, you know, Yu Darvish has been tremendous. One awful game, one other shaky game. You know, Joe Musgrove has been fantastic the entire season. Mackenzie Gore has been better than anybody could have thought he would be. Look, this is the kind of outings Mackenzie Gore is throwing right now that you would have expected in his career as a guy who was taken as the third pick. I'm not sure you would have expected it in his first six starts or whatever it's been so far, you know, and they got a couple good outings from Clevinger we can get to, which is a concern. Sean Manaea has been decent, you know, good to decent, but I certainly wouldn't say he's been as great as maybe we could have expected or would have thought. But the bottom line is every night, it's such a cliche, these guys go out and the starting pitcher is giving them a chance to win games. And when you've got that, that's a big part of the battle in baseball.
Yeah. What I love about cliches, you know what I love about cliches? They're cliches for a reason. Right. But the thing about them is they rarely actually come true. Like, you know, you espouse the cliche. Oh, we've got the starting rotation that gives us a chance to win every night. Okay. Yeah, sure. Yeah. You're right. Like if I were on the mound, you could have a chance, I guess. This one is true. You have the cliche, and here's the one that the Padres have blown my mind with. The cliche of, you know, play pitching, defense, and timely hitting. That wins games. okay, yeah, right.
Right.
You know, so do the teams with the highest slugging percentage win games too. Well, here are the Padres for more than a month winning games by pitching, defense, and timely hitting. And so I enjoy that very much. Mackenzie Gore, real quick. Jay, you probably remember when I covered the Chargers, I was not a huge draft guy because they haven't played in the NFL yet. And I was pushing back on the fact that everyone would lose their mind for a month or two about these players. And we knew what they were going to do. And it was following along. And when everyone was wrong, well, the next year we bought right back into, you know, all that. Anyway, and those are players that immediately play in the NFL.
Right.
The prospects thing, I don't even let it drive me crazy because it's so silly. But the, I guess there was a remaking or something of the prospects today for one of these sites. And I respect the heck out of what they do. I respect the heck out of what Jeff Sanders does for us. That's great. But it just made me laugh because Mackenzie Gore is still like the 90th ranked prospect or something. He's in the major leagues throwing 6 one-run innings.
Right. Like every time out, 5 or 6 innings, he's giving up 1 run, maybe 2 runs. I mean, he has looked like a guy that you would hope he would be as the number 3 pick in his third year or something like that. And I know nobody wants to wait 3 years or anything like that for guys to show up. And if, you know, your first outing is your outing, and after that, it's that's all you are. But if this is what he is, he's pretty darn good. And he's I just you can't find fault with anything that he's done. He's winning, or not just winning, but he's pitching well. When he has his A game, his B game, his C game, his A slider, his D slider, whatever you want to call it, he's had to go about it different ways. And it seems like each time he's found a way to get through his 5 or 6 innings and, you know, not just keep the team in the game, but give them a tremendous chance to win each time out. Now, the question's going to come, and we'll get to this later. What happens when his innings total keeps rising, and who's going to shut, and what's going to happen when they have to shut him down a little bit or ease off? And one of the ways to do that was to have 5 other really healthy starters. And obviously the news over the weekend that Mike Clevinger is not healthy is not a good sign. I'm not even going to say that it looks like it's nothing serious, because you and I have been doing this with this team for too long. And look, let's hope it's nothing serious. I will believe it when I see Clevinger out on the mound again. Hopefully that's after missing only a couple starts. He gets back out there. He looks good because he was pitching well before this. But I'm not even going to speculate about that because it's useless.
I do think that's wise.
We need to see Clevinger on the mound again.
I do think that's wise. We'll know in a few days what they truthfully believe, and I'll get to that in a second, because the reason I say we'll know in a couple of days is he's supposed to just be shut down for a few days and then start throwing some bullpens and be right back in. I will say that Bob Melvin seemed to really struggle with this. It was almost like he wanted to tell us before the game, but couldn't. And I really believe that partially was they were thinking about letting him pitch again, see if he could go a few innings. And I really believe that that's on all the information yesterday, that this is not Jace Tingler, who was afraid to say anything, didn't say anything, thought that if he said anything, it might help the other team, you know, get a base runner or something. This is, I really believe, a minor thing. It doesn't matter, because Jay Posner is right. We will wait to see until Mike Clevinger is back out on the mound.
Let's get that. Circulating somewhere that
I see it all the time. It's nothing new.
Of course, I know.
So Jay, we got what we have is Nick Martinez, who, I mean, I'm telling you, I know his last start wasn't great by the numbers, but he pitched really well in that. He did. Right. He had a bad inning. He's not a great pitcher. When Nick Martinez has a bad inning, the other team's going to score 3 or 4 runs. He had 4 good innings and a bad inning. The start before that, 7 innings, I believe it was 1 run. He pitched the 5 scoreless innings, 4 scoreless innings of relief the other night. Looked absolutely fantastic. That changeup is for real. He's starting tonight. Wow. That's pretty cool, man. They're not calling up Reese Kinnear. No offense, Reese. They're not calling up Reese Kinnear. Nick Martinez will start for them tonight. Tomorrow night will be Blake Snell. I'm sure you want to talk about that. And then Yu Darvish. The Padres do not miss Corbin Burns. He will face Blake Snell tomorrow night. Adrian Hauser tonight, Corbin Burns, and then Aaron Ashby. Jay, what do you got on the Brewers?
Well, I was surprised to see Aaron Ashby down for Wednesday because Eric Lauer, who has been incredible for the Brewers, and man,
they face the Cardinals next.
Yeah,
I don't know if that's anything, but
I don't know if it is. And that trade looks worse and worse by the day. I know the Padres didn't have it was the right move to get rid of Eric Lauer and Luis Urias, who I just don't think there was necessarily room for either one of them.
That's one of the things.
I don't know. I mean, you can mention it. But again, when you do make a deal like that, just because you have to trade people, it's who you get in return that counts. I mean, Zach Davies was useful, and he did help them get Darvish. So, in that sense, you can't argue. You know, you and I have differed for the last year or so on Trent Grisham. I was really down on him last year. You were more forgiving. I'm still down on him this year. I don't see any reason to change my mind based on his offense right now. I mean, he has his moments, but in general, to me, he still takes way too many pitches, and not just pitches early in the at-bat, but pitches late in the at-bat. And, you know, sort of there comes a time where you got to protect the plate so you don't strike out. And even if it's a pitch that you don't think you can hit, I mean, I don't know, maybe this is old school and guys don't do this anymore, and I'm showing my age, but if there's a pitch that's on the corner, you can't just hope that the guy's going to call it a ball. You need to foul it off. And that's the part where I think some of these guys, and I think Grisham has appeared to be the worst of this so far. But anyway, what I was getting at, and we can get back to that in a second. Lauer pitched on Friday, pitched a 7-inning shutout, I think it was, against Washington. And so I thought he might pitch Wednesday here because that would kind of be the normal day, but he's not going to throw that day. So the Padres are missing Lauer. They're missing Brandon Woodruff, who's a pretty good pitcher, but has not been all that great this year. As you said, they're not missing Burns. One suggestion I would make for the Padres is not letting this come down to the ninth inning and having the Brewers have a lead, because Josh Hader, and I think there was a game last year where the Padres knocked him around a little bit. Does that stand out? Or maybe the
it
year
does. I know what you're talking about, and I'm thinking it can't be 2019 since they didn't play them in 20. So
yeah, so it must have been last. It must have been last year. But Josh Hader this year has pitched in 15 games. He has 15 saves. He's pitched 13 2/3 innings, and he's not allowed a run. He's allowed two hits. 44 at bats. Two hits, 2 for 44, 21 strikeouts. And so, again, I'm not sure that you want it to come down to Josh Hader there. The other interesting guy out of the bullpen is Devin Williams, who beat out Jake Cronenworth, was one of the guys who beat out Cronenworth for Rookie of the Year a couple of years ago, which I thought was kind of silly that a setup reliever would get that. But I really don't care about awards. So
especially Rookie of the Year.
Yeah, almost any award. Williams has pitched 15 innings this year, and he struck out 29. But so his rate is actually higher even than Hader's. He's also allowed 11 hits and 11 walks. So he is quite interesting when he comes out there. But anyway, that's where the Brewers are. I know that you are very familiar with their leading home run hitter,
love me some.
Who used to play right field for the
love me some Renfro
for the Padres and provided a couple great moments for the Padres. I mean, obviously that walk off slam against Kenley Jansen, which was 3 years ago, but Renfro's been good this year. He has 9 home runs. He only has 19 RBIs, which I found kind of funny. His on base percentage is over 300, which was always the knock against.
Remember when he'd get like 303 and be like, "Oh my gosh, Hunter Renfro's coming around."
I think it's 305. It's 305 this year. He's hitting .268, which is the best batting average on the Brewers among their regular guys. Urias is back, I believe. He played Saturday, didn't play yesterday. He's only played 16 games, but has been good. Rowdy Tellez has been good. So the Brewers ranked 5th in OPS.
That's something
new. The Padres
are
19th. But the interesting thing is they're 7th in runs. The Padres are 9th. So there's only a difference of 8 runs between the two teams. The Brewers have 55 home runs, though, and the Padres have 32. Now, I know their park is a little easier to hit home runs in, but it'll be a test. And their ERA, yeah, they play in that division. Their ERA, 3.46, Padres, 3.47. So there you have it.
You know, for all that we talk about, and I'll invoke the it's early and I've been traveling and I'm tired card. I had these stats rattling around in my head, but I will promise you that I'm on a tangent here that's correct. For all that we bash on this offense, and yes, the Padres need to hit more homers and they know it. You know, they scored in 4 different innings in 2 games on this trip. They scored in 3 different innings in multiple games beyond that. Mm-hmm. They're, like you said, they're whatever it is, 9th in runs.
Yeah.
They had 17 hits yesterday. They had 16 hits the first game of the trip. I don't know. They're doing okay. I'm writing almost every day about something that's wrong or that could be wrong or whatever. There's even been a couple times I'm like, geez, man, really. But this has been – that's the fun part of covering this team, and I would hope that it's some part of the enjoyment of being a fan of this team is that now when you're griping about them, it's stuff like that. Oh, they're winning, but how will they win the World Series? They're winning, but how will they beat the Dodgers? That should be at least a little bit fun for us. It certainly is for me.
And I think that if you're not enjoying watching Manny Machado right now, then you're just watching the wrong sport. And I could say that a little bit about Hosmer as well. But Machado's just different. I mean, Hosmer's had a very good season, but there's just something different about when Machado comes to the plate. I'm still surprised. There's always one of the guys on our copy desk is always asking why does anybody pitch to Machado? And it's a pretty fair question sometimes. Why does Machado get anything to hit? And yesterday was, you know, another example where he was just, you know, roping balls around the ballpark. He did have one soft double, but otherwise he's just hits the ball hard almost all the time. And it's, you know, he made the turn the double play yesterday on a play that was so much harder than it looked.
Golly, that was incredible.
I know.
And it gets glossed over because, yeah. I mean, but I watched it 4 times again. Like, it was incredible. You're right, Jay.
Yeah. Yeah. And so I just think, and you know, yes, it's really early in the season. It's a quarter of the way through the season. He's been the best player in the National League for the first quarter of the season. Now, whatever that means going forward, it means nothing. But and it doesn't mean he's going to be the MVP or anything like that. And MVP stuff gets talked about way too soon. So don't even mention that he's the MVP. Just mention he's the best player in the league right now. I mean, based on everything that we've seen, at least watching, being able to see him every day. So again, if you're not enjoying that, if you're not enjoying this pitching staff, not enjoying Taylor Rogers, yeah, it's easy to pick stuff apart. It's easy to pick on certain guys, you know, even guys that are hitting well over 300. That people still love to pick on. But look, Will Myers had a big weekend. Cronenworth had a big home run the other night. You know, there's just that they're getting enough, as you mentioned, enough timely hitting where they're still winning games.
Will Myers might be. I can't believe it took us 24 minutes. Will Myers might be on a Will Myers mode right now. That's what he might be in. And so you just talking about with a couple of players yesterday, you just get out of the way and write it while Will is going, because it could be 12 games long, could be 7, could be 20. Just let it go. You know, it's weird, Jay. I don't know if you thought maybe I did, but I did not get any emails. I can't authoritatively speak on tweets. I've talked about my mental health and the fact that I don't necessarily check a lot of tweets, but I'm fairly good with emails. I didn't get a lot of emails telling me about how Hosmer picked that last throw on Saturday. That's weird. I didn't get any, because had he missed it.
Right.
I mean, I know that's a first baseman's job and everything to do that. It was still a nice play. But I definitely would have got like 10 emails, and God forbid if I saw the tweets, if he had missed that. So I don't know. It was weird. I was really surprised by that. Okay. Sarcasm.
I don't think you were.
Maybe I missed it.
I don't know.
Eric Hosmer is getting like one, he's going 1-for-4, 1-for-5 every night. He's still hitting the ball hard. Yeah, right. There's a reason. The people that talk about hitting the ball on the ground, there's a reason that that's valid. Like, you know, a lot of times he hits the ball 104 miles an hour and he's out. He is what he is, but he has stepped up. You mentioned a couple other guys getting timely hits, but like, they don't have to be bad because Machado's good. I mean, Machado's amazing. Right. I think a lot of guys have stepped up. Machado's stepped up to another level because he's Manny Machado. He's going to the Hall of Fame almost certainly. Like, this is
wondrous to watch. There are guys, other guys cannot step up to the level that Machado steps up. Right. Like you said, he's different. But that doesn't mean guys like Will Myers can't deliver big hits. And which he has done. And it doesn't mean Ha-Seong Kim can't play great defense in addition to getting, you know, some timely hits. But, you know, having those guys on that side of the infield. And of course, I mean, they're 27 and 14 and the guy everybody considers to be their best player hasn't played a down yet. I think it's interesting, you know, Bill Center, who's watched more baseball than either of us.
I'm glad we're going to talk about this.
Combined, you know, brought up yesterday that those two guys on the left side of the infield in Kim and Machado might be the best left side of the infield that he's seen in watching the Padres. And I know I mentioned, I think once before, that Machado might be the best defensive player the Padres have ever had. Now you've got a situation where you've got two guys sort of playing together over there. And I know, you know, Nick Canepa brought up Greg Nettles and Gary Templeton. Greg Nettles was past his prime when he played here. Maybe when Nettles was 30 years old instead of 40, he might have been able to play like that. He didn't play like that when he was here. I thought Gary Templeton was a very good player. I've never thought he was as great as some other people thought he was. But Kim is a very, very good defensive shortstop. And
it's remarkable.
Watching those two. What's that?
Like, he is as dependable as anybody. And he makes plays. He doesn't make them look spectacular. It's not Manny-esque, but he makes them.
That was a huge double play the other day. And just a great play at a big time. And I think that, you know, the defense that these guys have played is also been enjoyable. And don't leave out guys in the outfield. I mean, what Profar had to go through the other night was ridiculous. I was glad to see the Giants. It sounded like they increased some security a little bit after that happened. But that's nothing new in San Francisco. I mean, Tony Gwynn used to talk about them all the time at Candlestick. It's unfortunate, but I'm glad at least Profar didn't get hurt.
They are obnoxious as heck. I want to hate them. I really do. Giants fans, like you, they really get into games and love their team, and it's a great atmosphere when it's not like that. That's the shame about it.
That's the thing.
Great atmosphere.
Yeah, really. Make it a great atmosphere and enjoy the game.
And the players said that.
Yeah, I just don't understand that mentality. There's never an excuse for throwing something. And then I love the fact that they were booing Profar like it was his fault. And here's the 30-minute tone, by the way.
Well, I got to say this, though. I want to say this. I'm really glad you brought up the Bill Center thing. Now, the fact that it was on Twitter is somewhat ironic. It's funny. But Bill Center, folks, there is no such thing as recency bias for Bill Center, okay? We stopped being great after Patton, okay? For Bill Center to say that this is probably the best left side of the infield, we can all stop talking about it, because that just, I loved that, because a lot of us get swept into, you know, the greatest, this is the best. No, it's not. Magic Johnson was. I mean, like, you know, this is not the case, okay? But when Bill Center says it, no chance that he's getting caught up in today, all right? Because he just got done watching a World War II documentary and driving his 1947 Mercedes, and that's what is happening. So, absolutely props to Bill.
Kevin, I don't think we can top that. So,
Thanks, everybody.
We'll go. Thanks. And we'll be back on Friday to talk about what happened with the Brewers and what's ahead for the holiday weekend with the Pirates in town.